Hello, welcome to this webcast introducing Novell Cloud Manager, hosted by Novell and Forrester. My name is Ben Grubin, Director of Data Center Management at Novell, and I'm joined today by James Staton, Vice President and Principal Analyst from Forrester. James, the floor is yours.
Great, thanks so much, and thanks everyone for attending this session. You know, we get tons and tons of questions about cloud computing, the difference between public and private, and which way people should be thinking about going and where the differences are and benefits are between them. So as a way to get started on this, what we always like to start with is a very quick decoder ring of what exactly we're talking about because it's such a broad topic. So I won't spend a lot of time on definition, but some basic things to understand for the purposes of this conversation today. First and foremost, cloud computing, when we say that, what we are talking about here is a standardized IT service that is delivered through a pay-per-use pricing and economic model and can be self-provisioned by the end user. This typically means that this service is automated fully, so that as soon as you put in your request for the service automatically gets provisioned. And then also for the purposes of today's conversation, I want to make sure we're all on the same page about what we mean by the term workload. So we're going to use that term quite a bit as we go through this presentation today. A workload is an application, middleware, and OS all packaged together into a virtual workload instance. So it's something you put inside of a virtual machine or a full workload you could put somewhere else. So that's the context to start our conversation today. Let's talk a little bit about the value of cloud computing because that's really why everybody's excited about this. We don't really want to change technology or move to a new technology. We do it because there's compelling business value for doing so. And the most important thing to understand about the compelling value of cloud computing is number one on here, which is rapid time to market, because that's the big reason that a lot of the developers inside your organization and other organizations are moving to cloud, is because they see this as a means for them to get access to resources immediately so they can get their job done more effectively. And that's a really important aspect. Now, what does that mean for you as someone who might want to provide cloud services for your internal developers and clients? What it means is a variety of things. It means providing them with instant access to resources, but doing it in a way that benefits you by providing those resources from a shared set of resources that they pay for only when they use them, because that's a really big part of the overall value proposition. Time to market to resources is great, but developers have a tendency to use resources for a short period of time and then be gone, and they don't want to be stuck with and burdened with, and nor do you as an IT organization want to be stuck and burdened with an ongoing capital or ongoing operating cost. Second thing is you want this to be a very predictable environment, one in which there's a prediction to what is being deployed, how it's being deployed, and that allows you to deploy over and over in a very consistent but very flexible way. That's a really important thing that cloud computing brings. You also get a lot of the benefits of this by taking all the standardization and putting it in the hands of an automation tool that can just deploy this in a consistent fashion, getting rid of human error as a concern and making sure that there's a high degree of repeatability in how this is accomplished. And then the last thing is, if you can do this in a standardized, predictable means, you want to be able to have the developers get immediate access to these things and provision just what they're looking for. This reduces the load on you as the IT organization because you're, A, trusting that it's going to be a standardized deployment, deployed through automation, deployed in a predictable fashion, so your people don't have to babysit this, be manually involved in processing this, nor do you have to worry about the cost because the cost is managed through this automation process as well. Now, if you could deliver all that value to the developer, he gets what he wants, instant access to resources that is on a pay-per-use basis, so as soon as he stops using it, the bill goes to zero, and you get the benefits of developers using a common set of resources that is shared, that's deployed through automation, and can be self-managed. That's a pretty strong value proposition. However, to get there, there are some significant trade-offs. And part of the reason that a lot of people are wary of cloud computing is specifically for these reasons. If we're talking about public clouds tend to have very limited SLAs or limited variability in the SLAs you can get. They tend to have limited security in that they secure up to their point of virtualization, and they don't tend to go any further than that. Typically, because they're public, they're typically shared among companies. That's a concern for a lot of organizations. They don't want their data or their instances being commingled with others, nor do they really want the concern that this is accessible or visible to hackers or outside parties where all this stuff is lying outside of your own protections, which you configured and you managed and you set up the way you wanted to. So as a result, most IT shops say, don't go using the public cloud for all the reasons we just discussed. Let's set up a private cloud. Let's set up an environment like we were talking about, but do it inside of our own walls. We'll be able to still deliver the time to market that our developers are interested in. We'll leverage our investments we've made already in virtualizing our environments. We'll do this with our own protections, so it's inside of our firewalls and all the protections and monitors and everything that we rely on, they'll be in place. And we'll do a flexible chargeback model as well that gives them that cost visibility and the ability to turn it off. And if we do all that, that's exactly what they want. So what's not to love if you can pull this off? Well, the real challenge is that most IT organizations, they don't have the experience, the standardization of their operational procedures. They don't have the trust of automation or the use of automation up to this point, and they certainly haven't had a lot of experience doing self-service to their deployers for these types of capabilities. And as a result, they're really not ready to operate a full private cloud. And when we talk to organizations out there who sort of meet this criteria or have a private cloud, it's a really small audience. We've only found about 5% of enterprises who actually have the degree of standardization and operational excellence and automation to actually have a private cloud. And that doesn't mean 5% have a private cloud. That just means 5% have the ability to get there. For the rest of us, this is a journey. For the rest of us, we have to move from wherever our IT organizations are right now to this new cloud operating model. Now, it's very easy to say, well, I've got a VMware environment, it's all set up, and I'm getting some workloads in there, and I'm able to provision them pretty quickly through VMware or other management tools. So I'll just say that my virtual environment is a cloud. And we see a lot of companies doing that, but just declaring victory and saying you've got it doesn't mean that you actually operate like it, doesn't mean that people actually view you as an outsider, as being a cloud. It doesn't mean the developer value that they're seeking is coming through. So it's really important to know that when you're thinking about your private cloud, it is a step beyond what you've already done with virtualization. And that's an important thing to note when we take a look at how many people are using virtualization and to what degree. Now, I fully expect that everyone attending this session is using virtualization at some degree, mostly on the server, probably on your storage as well. But it's the amount of virtualization you're using, the percentage of your total environment that's being consumed with virtualization, that is a determining factor for how ready you are for the cloud. So if you look at the data that's shown here in this chart, what you can see is while there's a lot of people that are using virtualization today, the percent of their systems, their x86 systems that are virtualized, is relatively low. And they have some ambitions to get them into the 60, 70%, even up to 75% range this year. But that requires a change in your operational procedures to manage that big of a virtualization environment. You have to actually shift from managing VMs one at a time or managing servers that are VM hosts one at a time to managing the whole thing as a holistic pool. And that's a big part of the maturity journey. In terms of what is the maturity journey, it basically has four stages, and I'll take you through each of these four stages. But you have to go through all of these stages to get to the point where you are operating a pool in an automated fashion, which is how private clouds work. So let's look at these stages and talk about what's involved in each of them. The first phase, a lot of you may have already gone through, which is the acclimation phase. This is getting comfortable with what virtualization can and cannot do, what value it can bring to your organization, and where you may want to apply it. What happens a lot in the acclimation phase, and a lot of this should seem familiar to you, is where you go from application to application, virtualizing it and seeing what the effects are. Can this application be virtualized? Does its performance get impacted? What's the DR scenario now that it is virtualized? You go through these processes every single time. You're getting more familiar with how the management software works, how the hypervisor works, what you need to change in your procedures to take advantage of it. All of that happens in the acclimation phase. And one really clear way to know that you're in the acclimation phase is based on a conversation between you and the business. What happens in phase one of the business is that for every new application that's available out there, IT goes begging to the business, can I virtualize this workload? As long as the majority of the conversations are happening that way, you know you're in the acclimation phase. When you get into the strategic consolidation phase, which is stage two, you know that's occurred because that conversation changes. And what happens in that conversation is the power shifts over to IT. Because you've proven that virtualization works, when you're in the strategic consolidation phase, you're basically changing to the default deployment of anything is going to be virtualized, and now the business is going to have to create the business case for why something should not be virtualized. When that becomes the dominant conversation in your organization, you are in the strategic consolidation phase. Now, in strategic consolidation, this is essentially the stage where more often than not, organizations want to declare victory. Because once you're in this position, this is where your concentration is on rapid consolidation of your environment, taking lots of things deployed physically, moving them into virtual. You're starting to build standardized procedures and standardized means for managing the virtual environment, and you're able to achieve significant cost savings for your organization. Typically, what happens in this phase as well is that the virtual server administrator starts to gain a significant amount of power in the organization and credibility because of the cost savings he's achieved. He's also typically someone who says, through my virtualization management tools, I can spawn a new VM in 10 minutes, just like a cloud can. But can he do the rest? Manage the environment as a holistic pool, deliver a chargeback model that's consistent and predictable, and a variety of other capabilities? Probably not. And what typically happens in stage two is you get eventually to a point in which there's a significant amount of pain with the virtual environment, which we typically characterize as virtual machine sprawl. This is where you've got more VMs than you can manage. You didn't start managing holistically as a pool from the beginning, and now you've got to figure out how you get there. You don't know who owns the VMs. You don't know if they're at the most recent patch level. You haven't enforced standards in the middleware and operating system versions that go in. And there's a variety of changes here that now need to be dealt with. That typical pain that occurs in the second stage forces organizations into the third stage, which we call process improvement. What happens in stage three is an organization moves away from speeding up virtualization, just dumping everything in there, to slowing it down and saying, wait a second, we need to have consistent procedures and processes for how we set up this environment. One example is lifecycle management. You probably weren't doing lifecycle management of virtual machines before because you were thinking the way you thought about physical servers before. When you assigned a virtual machine to somebody, its life cycle ended when the server died. It didn't end any time before that. You didn't have to think about expiration dates. You didn't have to think about cloning of virtual machines. You didn't have to think about ensuring that there was a master virtual machine, that others that have been spawned by it are linked to it so that you can update and manage the patches. There's just a variety of capabilities that are in virtualization that you just didn't have to think about before, and now that you're managing a pool, you need to. This can also cause a significant amount of tension between the storage administrator, the network administrator, the security administrator, and the virtual machine manager. Because not only do you want to manage the server virtualization environment consistently, they want that as well. They want to know when you spawn new virtual machines that the right security is applied, that it goes into only the designated VLANs, and that it gets a storage volume in the best practice volume provisioning that the storage guys set up. So all this coordination needs to take place, and that's where process documentation and process improvement are so critical. Once you've gotten to the point where you now have consistent processes and procedures, it's time to move to stage four. And in stage four, you make the transition to thinking not about the VMs, but thinking about the pool. And the only way you can really get out of the mode of managing all the separate VMs is to handle those procedures and processes that you have documented in stage three over to automation software. So that all that stuff that handles provisioning, patching, configuration management, lifecycle management, retiring things out of the environment, cloning them, setting up master templates, you want all that stuff to be handled by automation because those become rote functions that take you away from the ability to manage the pool holistically. And if you want to operate the pool as a shared service that allows self-provisioning to take place, where you're charging back for the consumption of those resources, you've got to move to that higher level. And that's what happens in stage four. When you get to stage four, you're finally experientially ready and operationally ready to operate a cloud. Now, how long does it take to go through these stages? What we found through our research with organizations who have been moving through this process is that it's a long journey. This is a journey that can take you up to 5 years, depending on where you are and how big, complex, and confusing your environment is today. If you have pretty good procedures and processes and you don't have a very large environment that needs to be virtualized or has been virtualized, you may be able to move through this a bit faster, but at the minimum, it could still take 3 years from the acclimation phase to reach pooling. So don't expect to be able to do this overnight. Now, given that it's going to take you time to do this, you can start in pockets where you gain expertise in pockets about virtualization and managing things as a pool. Two places we highly recommend you start to get this expertise built in your organization is either your test and dev environment, where you can operate a lab as a shared environment that has these benefits and capabilities, or where there's new projects that are being built. Typically, these are the two areas where developers have the most frustration with IT, need the most fast access to resources, and that's why we recommend starting here. You definitely want to start with a role-based access deployment tool, either a self-service portal or a catalog. You're definitely going to want to maintain some standards of what types of VMs can be deployed in here. You're absolutely going to want to enforce the expiration dates so you can clean up the pool environment and leverage as much automation as possible in setting up these environments. Now, another option, another way that you can speed up this process is to not try to build your own private cloud, which can be challenging, but actually contract with a third party who can host the cloud for you. So in addition to public clouds and internal clouds, there's a middle segment called hosted clouds, where what happens here is you work with a service provider who has expertise in running cloud environments, and they set up a cloud environment specifically for you, meaning that it's on dedicated hardware that's dedicated to you, but then they lay a cloud management software layer on top of this that has all the automation and the self-service provision built in, and then they basically manage it on your behalf. That way it doesn't impact your own procedures and processes, and you can take as much time as necessary to mature your organization to take advantage of this. So some key recommendations when you're thinking about going down the cloud path. You want to make sure that you start with something that's going to allow you to gain experience. Test and dev, greenfield applications are a good place to do this. They're not so highly visible, nor are they mission critical, so that if you don't get it right in your first efforts, you impact the organization in such a negative fashion. If you're going to go down this path, you will find that chargeback and sharing of resources is a political issue, not a technical issue. And so you're going to need to have executive support from different business units as well as from your own IT organization to help move this model forward inside of your organization. If you want to do chargeback, you're going to have to know what your actual costs are. You will be scrutinized for the pricing that you come out with that, so I'd highly recommend that you have those baseline costs going in. And you're going to want to make sure that when you price it out, that you do so in a fashion that is incenting the users in the business to use the cloud. They don't really have any reason to do that right now, and you want to make sure both in pricing and speed of deployment that you incent them to go there. And then finally, you want to be thinking about this as a business service. While it is an IT service, reporting to the business things that matter to IT but don't necessarily matter to them will just discourage them from using it. So make sure you understand what is important to them that you measure a new metric around this environment. The more you can do that, the more they're going to be attracted to using this service. Forrester has a ton of research on how to make this journey happen. Some of them you see listed here, with including a case study of an organization who's moved to this model. So feel free to take a look at this research or reach out to me directly for more information about this topic.
Thank you, James. A quick question. So we've heard a lot about private clouds being a stepping stone to the public cloud, helping businesses develop the kind of capabilities they need to really leverage the public cloud safely. Is the private cloud temporary? Won't there always be some on-premise infrastructure?
Yeah, there will definitely be on-premise infrastructure as far out as we can see in our forecasts, because some things just don't make sense to be in the cloud, nor do they necessarily fit the economic model of the cloud. You know, one of the things that I talked about at the beginning is developers want to do that quickly, and then they want to get out, which means they want to leverage the cloud to the point that it always goes back to zero. Something that's going to live there permanently is actually going to cost more in a cloud environment than it would on dedicated equipment or on traditional hosting. So there's definitely a value proposition that remains for these things. Why it matters to build out a private cloud is twofold. One, for the reasons that we talked about here, some applications you're just not going to put in a public cloud. But secondly, is exactly to your question, experientially, running a private cloud helps you understand the difference between the cloud environment and what it provides as a security layer and what you need to supplement on top of that. And that's a really important concept we call the uneven handshake, where the cloud provider, whether it's you or a third party, is going to provide a level of security to the pool that is appropriate to the pool. If you want something that's going to be appropriate to your particular application, it may be above that core security capability. And understanding where the line is between where the cloud stops with security and where you need to pick up and carry all the way up is a really important concept to understand experientially.
Very interesting. James, can any size enterprise benefit from operating their IT as a service or a private cloud, or is this really only beneficial to very large enterprises?
Well, obviously, any organization that does things in a more predictable, consistent fashion and can leverage automation is going to benefit, whether it's the smallest organization all the way through to the very, very largest. When it comes to running your own private cloud, that requires a certain amount of use across business groups, and that requires a certain sized environment to make sense. Now, this could be small. It could be five servers, and everybody's sharing those five servers. In that circumstance, a fully automated private cloud environment might be very beneficial. But the bigger the organization, with the more business units, the more interdepartmental use of resources and sharing are going to see the greatest benefits.
James, thank you very much.
Now I'd like to take a moment and talk to you about a product that we're launching, Novell Cloud Manager. So one of the things that we talk about today is the challenges that many of our customers face in today's data center.
You heard about some of these challenges as James was talking about private cloud. Slow service delivery. How long does it take to get a new service up and running in your data center? How many people are involved in that? In the old days, this could take 90 days or more. The goal of a private cloud, among other things, is to accelerate that process. And you can bring that into as little as 90 minutes in many cases. Too little automation. This is a related subject. A lot of times with the number of people involved and the number of steps involved, there's a lot of errors that can occur. There's a lot of manual processes that need to be worked through. There's a lack of transparency, not just into the process, but into what's happening to the business service after you deploy it into your private cloud. So it's very difficult to set good service level targets, to monitor and manage service level agreements, and to make sure those agreements are met over time. There's also a lot of inflexibility. I mean, there's multiple vendor stacks, and of course, this just gets worse if you've had to suffer through acquisition integrations or data center consolidations. You've brought multiple tools from multiple different environments together, and sometimes these tools just don't play well with each other. So there's a lot of vendor lock-in, and there's also a lot of licensing terms and vendors who really want to lock you into the platform that they maintain. So really, that can get expensive over time. It can get difficult to manage. And it's very difficult to bring all of these different spheres of management into a single pane of glass. So you saw earlier, as James was going through the Forrester Infrastructure Maturity Grid, these different stages, acclimation, strategic consolidation, process improvement, and then pooling and automation. So we look at this in a very similar way. And we look at this grid and say, we also see a lot of our customers are in stage one and stage two. Obviously, there's a lot more moving into stage two, and many of our customers are asking us how to move into stage three and start looking at what are the kind of processes we can improve on, how can we start dynamically managing our environment, how can we start unifying our different physical, virtual, and cloud environments to manage it in a more holistic fashion, and then how can I save money on my disaster recovery, how can I build my infrastructure to support the different service levels I need. Really, we look at a lot of companies that are in the process of stage two, moving into stage three, right? A private cloud is really about making that process improvement automatic, right? So first you develop the process improvement, then you develop the pooling and the automation necessary to make a lot of these processes happen in an automated fashion, in a low-touch fashion, in a way that's trackable and in a way that the security and the compliance of the environment can be maintained. So we've focused Novell Cloud Manager on helping enterprises build those process improvements that are necessary to gain the efficiencies that we really need to get to achieve our virtualization ROI and to move into the pooling and automation. First, let's go back for a moment, and this was also at the beginning of James's presentation, talking about defining cloud characteristics. What makes a cloud a cloud? Well, obviously, it's not just a pool of resources, because a pool of resources or shared infrastructure is really what virtualization provides today. In fact, if you use multiple virtualization vendors, you can have multiple pools of shared infrastructure. So a cloud is about one shared infrastructure among multiple business units, among multiple consumers, or customers for that matter if you're in a service provider environment. Rapid elasticity, being able to start up and stand down business services very quickly as demand requires. If you need more processing power on a given day of the week, you can do that. On-demand self-service acquisition model. This is really about how do you package, price, and present the business services that IT offers directly to the consumers of those business services. It has to be self-service so that the business, the infrastructure, and the application teams can come together and make those requests in a single unified portal so that they can be tracked and managed. But it also needs to be based on a service catalog. And that means defining standardized infrastructure components so you can build your environment in such a way that you don't have thousands of different unique workloads all over your environment. Instead, you can standardize down to a manageable number of specific building block workloads that all build up onto your business services. Once you've got those and you can price them and you can package them, you can put them in your service catalog and present them out to the business. Also, pay-per-use billing. This is a huge part of what Novell Cloud Manager offers in that it exposes the cost of running various infrastructure components at various service levels. So you can define the service level, you can define the business service, you can attach pricing to both of those things, which allows you to expose things like licensing costs or the underlying costs of the resources like memory, processor, and disk to serve that business service, while at the same time allowing you to say, hey, 99% uptime, high availability, rapid disaster recovery operations, that's going to cost a little extra. So you can price that into a high service level. And you can set up tiered service levels like platinum, silver, or gold. Also, and this is key, it's based on standard internet protocols. So we have a Web 2.0 portal that's skinnable, that's accessible to all of the different business functions, where everybody can log in through a web browser, thin client. There's not a lot of heavyweight custom code that has to run in client setting. And finally, it's measurable. It allows you to look at how many services are running in your environment, what is your current capacity, what are your capacity needs going to be, how do the current pipeline of business service requests and the capacity that those requests will need align to the current capacity available in the various service levels that you have to offer. So all of these different components make up a cloud. When we talk about workloads, and we've heard James mention it several times, and workloads are really about that operating system, middleware, and application stack, otherwise known as a VM when we're talking about virtualization. So a business service is really about multiple workloads, one or more, packaged together to provide a key service. In the case of, for example, SAP, you might have a database, an application, and a presentation server all packaged to one and presented out to the business as a single business service because you would really not typically launch one of those. You'd launch all of those together to provide that service. We see the cloud also as a journey, and really it's about moving from dedicated physical servers to virtualization and experimenting with cloud, where a lot of folks are today, into actually building an internal enterprise cloud. But building that internal enterprise cloud is a stepping stone to public cloud. And why is it a stepping stone? Because you need to build the processes, the procedures, the technologies, and the skill sets to handle workload mobility, this new capability that virtualization provides to literally move workloads from one physical part of your environment to another, and also between different physical environments, like between data centers or across organizational boundaries, how to build those capabilities inside, in your own private sandbox, behind your firewall, where you're not exposing yourselves to complex security, compliance, and management difficulties. So by building a private cloud inside, you build the capability to move to public cloud later. But this process is all about balance. As you move across this trajectory, it's about the balance between flexibility, the flexibility to put your workload wherever you need it, and control. How do you maintain compliance and security around that workload? Who has access to it? And where your data lives? So as you're thinking about how to build a private cloud so that you can use the public cloud in the future, it helps to think of certain criteria for how to assess the different solutions available. A solution for private cloud really needs to speed up and simplify the process to deploy a new business service. It needs to make the process of communicating with the various stakeholders involved faster and easier to deal with in the long run. It needs to allow you to create standardized configurations based on business requirements. This is about building a service catalog. You need to be able to define what are the basic building blocks of my infrastructure. You need to have very granular control into who gets access to what and how much. Does person A have access to workload A or B or business service D or E, and can they then provision that to environment X, Y, or Z? So different people have access to different workloads and can provision them into different environments. That level of granularity is really critical, particularly if you're looking at a multi-tenant environment, whether in an enterprise or a service provider. You need to provide visibility into current capacity and the future capacity needs. What do I have today? How much of it am I consuming? And what am I probably going to consume tomorrow? And that really helps you with the planning process. How can I plan for how I need to expand my infrastructure moving forward? You need to support existing and future infrastructure. This is part of the challenge with the theory that companies might make some kind of mass migration to the public cloud. There's a lot of current investments into data centers, real estate, processing capacity, disk space that's really tied into the current infrastructure that any modern major business has today. We need to support those and not cast those aside and make sure that whatever virtual or other infrastructure you've built out today is supported in your private cloud. And finally, you need to give application owners a business service view of their applications. And that doesn't just mean, you know, the model of what that application looks like. It's really about, is my service level target being met? Where is my service running? How is it performing? These are critical functions that need to be provided in order to get mission-critical applications into the private cloud. And without that, we're always going to be leaving a big chunk of existing infrastructures behind as legacy infrastructures. We don't want to do that, so we need something that gives us that business service view. So how does Novell Cloud Manager provide all of those capabilities? Number one, it creates efficiency. Between the infrastructure manager and the business service manager, it can automate the process of managing all sorts of different infrastructure tasks about how to define workloads, how to define business services, how to offer those out to the business, basically how to get your infrastructure manager off the phone taking requests to, you know, order new servers and allow the application and the business service owners to come and do that directly in a self-service catalog. It's about who gets what. It's about role-based access control, allowing an infrastructure manager to set up the various different business services and workloads that are available and who's allowed to access those from the application team. Maybe one person is allowed to produce LAMP stacks with Apache and Linux, and another administrator is primarily a Windows administrator and is only allowed to provision out an IIS box. So the example there is really about making sure the right people have access to the right things. So Novell Cloud Manager allows you to build standard configurations and put them in a service catalog. So a repository of different workloads combined into a model of different business services that can all be built on standardized images that can be well-controlled, version-controlled, and presented as part of the offerings out into the service catalog. They can be published out to the business, and the deployments can be customized after the fact so that you keep these standardized configurations as sort of your golden masters. It allows you to manage capacity by giving you a view into exactly what your capacity is at any given moment, what the capacity pipeline is in terms of what you're going to need going forward, and where that capacity is being eaten up and at what service level it's being eaten up. So it gives you a very granular view of what's available. Perhaps most importantly, it provides heterogeneous infrastructure support. And this is critical. It has support not just for existing and future infrastructure, but for various different types of infrastructure. So in version 1.0 of the product, we're going to support the open source Xen infrastructure, VMware vSphere, and Microsoft Hyper-V. This is really, really critical because right now, while VMware has a very large market share, the reality is that we believe enterprises are looking for the freedom to be able to use the right infrastructure for the right job. But it's very difficult to make the argument that you should have two different virtual infrastructures if you can't manage them from a single pane of glass. So what we're delivering to the enterprise is the ability to manage all of the virtual infrastructures that might be appropriate, Microsoft for Windows servers to take advantage of the favorable licensing terms, VMware for the high-performance environments that require things like DRS and high availability, and Zen for the lower service level workloads that you're willing to run on less expensive Blade servers, that sort of environment. We enable enterprises to do that from a single pane of glass, and that's a really critical function that's going to add a lot of freedom to current infrastructure management. Also, when we look at public cloud services, it's useful to think of a public cloud as just another virtual infrastructure. Really, when we talk about what is Amazon.com EC2, what is Terramark, they're really just more virtual infrastructures to provision into. How they're really implemented on the back end isn't really important, certainly not to the consumer of the technology. In fact, the entire purpose of Novell Cloud Manager is to abstract the business consumer of the IT services from how they're implemented. So we're actually, on our roadmap, planning to connect to Amazon EC2 and other public cloud providers directly from Novell Cloud Manager, which will allow you to use those external web services as additional pools of capacity for your mission-critical business workloads when you're ready to do that. Novell Cloud Manager, as I've talked about, builds and manages a private cloud on top of your existing infrastructure. It uses any combination of Zen, VMware, and Microsoft technologies. And by combination, I mean you could have all three running at the same time and provision into them as if it were a seamless private cloud. And on top of any physical resources, whether some of them are blades, some of them are pizza boxes, whatever physical resources you have that support these virtual infrastructures, you can bring those together in a single private cloud. Novell Cloud Manager enables self-service. It enables IT users to provide that portal for the business service provisioning while maintaining the security, compliance, and control necessary for enterprise security. The benefits here are all three teams, application, business, and infrastructure, coming together and collaborating to define what IT services are available and making those requests and managing them. And the key thing here with self-service is Novell Cloud Manager is about defining the interface between IT and the business. And the self-service catalog is really what that is. It's how the business requests services from IT and how IT manages itself as a service. It accelerates service delivery. When a workload is requested, the roles-based access control within the software can route those requests to the appropriate manager, to the appropriate cost center manager, to approve the request and the costs associated with it before it ever goes to IT to make sure that the right requests are made and that the finances are approved. Those can also be automated based on a rules. But once that request is approved, it then goes to IT, which can then be shown, here's the capacity demanded, here's the capacity available at that service level, do you want to approve this? At which point it can be actively provisioned into your environment. So not only does Novell Cloud Manager handle this workflow, but it handles the initial delivery of the business service and ongoing change requests, and it handles them quickly. It also provides a multi-tenant shared infrastructure. So as an administrator of Novell Cloud Manager, you can define different groups, organizations, different zones of control provision into who has access to what and where across the shared infrastructure. And this is really critical both for service providers and for large enterprises. There's also IT cost allocation transparency, so you can assign costs to the various components inside a business service that roll up to the business service itself and can then be presented out to the users via the self-service catalog. And finally, you can optimize utilization. You can see how the resources are being utilized among your different virtual infrastructures, among your different data centers, among your different service levels. You can use that information to manage those service levels more carefully. You can use it to manage your data center more efficiently. You can use it to manage your future capacity more easily. Thank you very much.